Okay, our reading for today is from The Miracle of Mindfulness by Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese Buddhist monk who died in Vietnam, but he lived mostly in France. In the United States, I have a close friend named Jim Forrest. When I first met him 8 years ago, he was working with the Catholic Peace Fellowship. Last winter, Jim came to visit. I usually wash the dishes after we finished the evening meal, before setting down and drinking tea with everyone else. One night, Jim asked if he might do the dishes. I said, "Go ahead, but if you wash the dishes, you must know the way to wash them." Jim replied, "Come on, you think I don't know how to wash the dishes?" I answered, "There are two ways to wash the dishes. The first is to wash the dishes in order to have clean dishes. The second is to wash the dishes in order to wash the dishes." Jim was delighted and said, "I choose the second way. To wash the dishes, to wash the dishes." From then on, Jim knew how to wash the dishes. I transferred the responsibility to him for the entire week. If while washing the dishes, we think only of the cup of tea that awaits us, then hurrying to get the dishes out of the way, as if they were a nuisance, then we are not washing the dishes to wash the dishes. What's more, we are not alive during the time we are washing the dishes. In fact, we are completely incapable of realizing the miracle of life while standing at the sink. If we can't wash the dishes, the chances are we won't be able to drink our tea either. While drinking the cup of tea, we will only be thinking of other things, barely aware of the cup in our hands. Thus, we are sucked away into the future, and we are incapable of actually living 1 minute of life. Thus ends the reading.
So my calling to ministry has a lot to do with social justice, and there is so much work needing to be done in the world right now, from immigration rights like we were working on in our forum the other week to the environment, and we know that we had a big climate change protest this fall and that this spring is the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. We're dedicated to LGBT rights and we're in the season leading into the Transgender Day of Remembrance right now. And our church has been committed to Black Lives Matter and continues to hang a banner in front of our church representing our commitment to those justice issues, all these justice issues that we work on in this faith. But doing all of that and the relentless need of this hurting world can leave us sometimes burnt out, discouraged, brokenhearted, full of pain and sorrow, and wondering what to do next. It's very easy to get discouraged when the arc of the universe as it bends towards justice is so very, very long. And as Theodore Parker said, our eyes can see only a little ways. And so it's one of the purposes of religious community to give us strength, to nurture us, both through giving us companions for this journey so that we know that we are not doing this work alone, but also giving us sustenance, nurturing us, giving us strength to keep on going out there and turning the world around. And so the form that this sustenance can take is varied. Sometimes what you need is a night relaxing, hanging out with friends, maybe listening to a polarized guru concert, sometimes going out, having some beers after church together. Sometimes it's exercise, a jog down the trail, a hike in the woods, Sometimes the sustenance you need for the work that you do is time in nature, breathing the sea air or the pine trees. Sometimes it's chocolate, just chocolate. But what we do here in spiritual community to give us sustenance, to give us strength for the journey ahead, for the work to be done, is turn to spiritual practice. And some of those spiritual practices we do in our worship service. Lighting our chalice is a ritual we do every week to call us into beloved community. Sharing our joys and our sorrows is a way to lift up those things that are on our hearts and by that manner make them lighter when they're troubles. So before I talk about different spiritual practices that different people have, it might make sense to define spirituality a bit. One of the first things I was asked by one of my first congregations was, so you use this word spiritual a lot. What do you mean when you say that? Some people think that spiritual practice is defined by talking to God. That's spirituality is a relationship with God, and that is definitely a part of it for many people, but it doesn't have to be a part of it, and it's not the whole of it either. So I take my definition, at least as I define it. Now you can define your spirituality your way, but I take my definition from one that was written by my mentor, Drew Kennedy, who was the former minister of the UU Church in Milwaukee. And this can be found in a book titled Everyday Spiritual Practice, by Scott Alexander, I believe. So he defines spirituality as a series of right relationships. And each right relationship has a mandate to follow that you know you're in right relationship when that mandate is met, when you are in harmony in this relationship. So the first relationship in spiritual practice is with yourself. To thine own self be true is the mandate. So this is about being in harmony with your own spirit, your own soul, finding that balance in your life. If we're talking about justice, it's finding that balance between doing that work of justice and between doing the things that nurture and feed you. You have to feed others, but you have to feed yourself in order to do that. The next relationship in spiritual practice is with those intimates in your life, your family, your friends, the people who you're in daily contact with. And that the relationship, the mandate for that relationship is the golden rule, to treat other people like you would like to be treated. So we know we're in balance and in harmony in that relationship when we are living out that practice. The next circle of relationship is with society, and the mandate there is, in the words of Jesus, to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, care for the sick, welcome the stranger, visit the imprisoned. So that is the mandate there that calls us to this work of justice, and we're in right relationship when we're living in our fullness in treating people with equality, with justice, and living up to our principles there. And then our next circle of relationship is with the earth and all of its creatures. So moving beyond the human to the whole planet, including its creatures. And then the imperative there is to honor and respect the earth, to tread lightly upon it, to minimize our impact. And then the next circle of care, the next right relationship, is that circle of the cosmos, or God, if you believe in God. And the imperative, if you believe in God, is to honor and love the Lord your God with all your might. If your imperative is to the cosmos, it's again to be in right relationship with the universe, to know your place within it, and to feel harmony in that relationship. So to set ourselves right, when we're whirling about, and when we're burning our toast and double booking ourselves, and when we're burning out on the work of church and the work of justice, the thing to do is to work on our right relationship in one or all of these spheres. And to do that, we turn to spiritual practice. So now that I've talked about what spirituality is, what do I suggest you do? Well, the answer is that it's going to be different for each person, and that what makes something a spiritual practice isn't what you are doing, but how you are doing it. If it's washing the dishes, it's washing the dishes to wash the dishes. However you name it, it's about focusing your energy and your awareness into that moment and into that activity that you're doing. The most obvious types of spiritual practices, the ones that come most easily to mind, are prayer and meditation. Those are the ones we hear about the most often as spiritual practices, and they have a certain amount in common with each other. Something that people often don't think about is the many different types, though, that there are of prayer and meditation. Both prayer and meditation can be done while walking, for example. The labyrinth is an ancient method of meditating or praying, following a winding path, focusing on the path, stopping at certain intervals with prayer, and giving your attention over to the Spirit. Also, both prayer and meditation can be done while singing. Think about something even as simple as like the Johnny Appleseed blessing. Oh, the Lord is good to me, and so I thank the Lord for giving me the things I need, the sun, the rain, and the apple tree. It's a prayer. It's a moment of meditation, and it's a certain type of prayer. There are prayers, we think sometimes of prayers as purely petitionary prayers or intercessory prayers. Those are the prayers where we're asking God for something, either for ourselves or for others. But prayers can be celebratory and can be prayers of adoration, like that Johnny Appleseed prayer, or like the poet E.E. Cummings, who wrote, I thank you, God, for this amazing day, for the leaping greenly spirits of trees and the blue true dream of sky, and for everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. There are also prayers of confession, and one type of prayer to think about today in particular is prayer of contemplation, a prayer that is designed just as a time to sit back, to think about, ponder the nature of the ultimate and your relationship to it. Now, prayer and meditation don't work for everybody. I mean, they could work for everybody, but they're not necessarily the right spiritual practice for everyone. Sometimes it takes a certain kind of spiritual energy, I think, to find that release in silence and that intense inward look that happens during meditation and the type of talking directly to God that happens in prayer. It's not always the right spiritual practice at the right moment for everyone. So other types of contemplative spiritual practice can include building an altar, which can be a physical way to focus that prayerful energy, and even sacred reading. For me, the poetry of reading poetry can be a spiritual practice, particularly when that poetry lends itself to a deeper understanding of the sacred. As I mentioned earlier, reading those meditation manuals to me is a spiritual practice that I engage in. The forms of poetry which juxtapose words next to each other that you aren't expecting, the tenseness that leaves you looking into the spaces, can be a spiritual practice for some. Another spiritual practice akin to this is journaling. Simply writing down your thoughts, your prayers, your meditations, instead of focusing them in your head, to put them out on paper. And of course, I think worshiping in church can be a kind of spiritual practice that engages the mind in contemplation. And so just as there are things that engage the mind, there are practices which engage the body. Yoga is one of these. It's an ancient Hindu practice deeply connected to their faith. And while people of many faiths have been doing yoga, it is a form of worshiping that comes out of a deep spiritual belief, deeply connected to the Hindu faith. Some martial arts are also ways to engage the body in a spiritual practice like Tai Chi. Another form of spiritual practice that engages your body is fasting. Fasting is something that's an ancient practice in many world religions, and it was one of the five pillars of Islam, where they fast during Ramadan from sunup to sundown. Marta Morris Flanagan, a UU minister, writes, when I fast, I pay attention to life, greater attention to life. I am more mindful. Some practice fasting as a time of repentance and self-sacrifice. For them, like other aesthetic practices, fasting involves the denial or withholding of pleasure. But for me, fasting is not a form of suffering, because I do not find suffering in and of itself to be a useful spiritual discipline. Instead, I fast to make more room for God. Conversely, the Reverend Aaron Payson, who's over in Worcester, writes about mealtime as a spiritual practice. He talks about saying grace, about sitting down with family, and the importance of that practice in his life. Spiritual practices can be about creativity as well. And of course, many of you know that I do Zentangling, and that for me is one art form that I've found to be a great spiritual practice for myself. And I know many other people in this church have engaged in it as well. And numerous types of art can be calming, meditative, and spiritual. When my daughter was having a burnout time a week ago or so, my prescription to her was to take a day and do art. Do the things that refresh your mind. Paint, draw, find time for yourself. And it worked. You name it. Creating music, writing, painting, sculpting, they can all be spiritual practices if they are done mindfully. If your mind and body are in the practice when you're doing the practice with spiritual intent. Quilting, sewing, crocheting, woodworking, these can all be times when your mind is focused inward and your methods focus your attention outward. Barbara Davenport writes of gardening as a spiritual practice, saying, "My hands and heart have dwelt in some patch of dirt every year of my life. Gardening has nourished this body and soul for all of its 57 years. Nature's gifts, dirt, seeds, sun, and rain combine to sustain life. These are gifts many of us take for granted, the gifts we cannot create, gifts I hope we will not destroy." So, spiritual practices are those practices that engage us in deep relationship, that set to right our imbalances and make those core relationships that sustain us, that nurture us, that allow us to go out into the world and do our work stronger. So for that relationship to self, some spiritual disciplines are like the contemplative ones done alone. For relationship to others, spirituality can be done with other people. Hiking together, reading together, even meditating together or creating art or music together. For working on that relationship to society, that's where social justice can be a spiritual activity in and of itself, the way it's done. I'm sure that those folks who have done peace vigils every week for 15 plus years have found in that practice a spiritual discipline. And for the earth, our relationship to being out there in nature is part of what sustains us and part of what we are called to do. And then, of course, there is our relationship to God or the universe. And for each one of us, that is going to be different, but it is important and special. And something to pay attention to. So as our bell tolls, I want to close with the ancient words of Kabir, the mystic poet. "You know that the seed is inside the horse chestnut tree, and inside the seed there are blossoms of the tree. So inside the human body there is a seed, and inside the seed there is the human body again. Thinkers, listen. Tell me what you know of that is not inside the soul. Take a pitcher full of water and set it down on the water. Now it has water inside and water outside. We mustn't give it a name, lest silly people start talking again about the body and the soul. If you want truth, I'll tell you the truth. Listen. Listen to the secret sound, the real sound, which is inside of you." May it be so.